We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, what is up, everybody? Welcome to the Guilty as Charged podcast. My name is Steven, and I am the host, as always. Joining me is my guy, Tyler. Tyler, what's up, man? How are you doing tonight?
Doing pretty well, dude. How are you?
Doing good. Home stretch to graduation, so the springtime is a nice pivot point for me because the draft is always like right at the start of graduation season for me as a school counselor. Mm-hmm. So today this week we've been working on scholarship applications with our students and things like that. So it's a nice pivot life from my side hustle to my actual job, which is the most important thing on my schedule, which is graduation. Yeah. So good, but stressed out, definitely ready for a vacation as we kind of pivot towards the summer.
Yeah, I mean, my main job is my main job, but during the draft and the past, you know, 5-6 days for us, it really feels like it was the other job. You know, like the podcast was truly the main focus.
Yeah,
because I certainly didn't spend, you know, 20 hours outside of school preparing for school this week.
Yeah.
So yes, it's a shift back to, like, you know, the actual job that I have.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a nice natural transition, and we're all about natural transitions on this show. So tonight's show is brought to you, as always, by our friends over at Prize Picks, the best and easiest ways to consume daily fantasy sports. Hopefully you guys are enjoying the NBA playoffs right now, as well as the NHL playoffs. And Prize Picks is a great way to get some skin in the game. We've enjoyed using Prize Picks, especially, you know, Tyler's mom has had quite a hot streak during the NFL season. And so it's the best way to, you know, support the show as well as, you know, support your own wallet. So we appreciate you guys. Hopefully you check it out. Today's show, we are talking about NFL draft superlatives for the Los Angeles Chargers. This is essentially going to serve as kind of our wrap-up of the post-draft coverage for this specific show. We are going to have a couple guests on the show next week, and then we're kind of transitioning into the real off-season stuff, and we'll talk about specific, you know, Chargers depth chart and training camp previews and all that stuff as we do every single summer. So it should be a lot of fun today. If you guys have a superlative that we miss and you just would love to have us touch on, feel free to leave a comment, leave a question, and we'll touch on some of them. So we have a list of a few that we're going to dive into here. We'll start with a softball, if you will, and that's favorite pick. Again, Chargers making 9 picks here, Tyler. You can go in any number of directions, and I'll try not to repeat your answer as well. But who was your favorite pick that the Chargers made over last weekend?
Yeah, I got to take the easy one. It's the one you all saw pretty early on, saw us react in a certain way that kind of signified we liked the pick. And my grade for that pick you know, holds up here as well. It's Junior Colson in the third round. Getting a starter, like someone who could genuinely start for the team immediately in round three, that fits the defense, that wasn't Blake Corum. It checked every box for us as Chargers fans. And yeah, Junior Colson, I think, kind of easily my favorite pick. I see different, you know, reasons to like other picks, and we do clearly like all these picks. Junior Colson was the favorite.
Yeah, he was on, I forget which show on NFL Draft Network, not NFL Draft Network, excuse me, NFL Network, with Bucky Brooks. And, you know, he was mentioning, like, he's already kind of assuming that he's going to be the play caller and he's going to be the green dot guy. And he's eager and excited to, you know, be able to call plays and be able to communicate with Derwin James and communicate with Keenan Allen, or not Keenan Allen. Oh my gosh, it's a mess right now. Communicate with Khalil Mack and Joey Bosa. And this is a guy that I think is ready to come in as a sponge, absorb everything, and just hit the ground running as much as he can. So it was our favorite pick probably of the weekend. So I think this is the natural first superlative here tonight.
So who's yours? Are you just agreeing with me here?
I do agree with you, but I actually have had a lot of time to like think about this, obviously. And I'm going to go say Ladd McConkey here. I think The more that I've thought about the wide receiver room post Keenan Allen and post Khalil Mack, or oh my gosh, my brain is fried. Y'all.
You guys tomorrow.
We'll be back later. Anyways, post Keenan Allen, post Mike Williams, I really am glad that they really highlighted the separator and highlighted somebody who can be a versatile chess piece on the offensive board. So I think for a variety of reasons, Ladd just fits so cleanly in that world. And then also it doesn't like pigeonhole them into any specific approach in free agency now, if they want to go sign somebody, or if they want to, how they want to address next offseason. You know, if next offseason, you know, they're sitting at pick 20 and there's a big X receiver on the board and they want to go that direction, they can do that. If they want to go tight end with the former Michigan tight end, Colston Loveland, if they want to go some other direction, some other tight end, having Ladd just gives them so many options on the field, off the field. It fills several different needs because he can be a vertical threat. He can work in the slot. He can be a clean separator. So I think just like the process of targeting Ladd, I think I've just become more and more of a fan of because of all of the different options that he can give them as a Charger going forward.
Yeah, I 100% agree. That was my second favorite selection. In terms of the board and him getting there, it felt like a pipe dream for him to be there, same like Junior Colson. But with Ladd McConkey and with this receiving group, I figured like, okay, like he's going to go to the Chiefs. He's going to go to one of these teams in the first round that needs a wide receiver. Then the Bills trade back. Okay, maybe he can go to the Bills there at 33. He doesn't, you know, Chargers trade up to 34 and take him. Awesome, awesome selection. Obviously, like I read my report on him and it just sounded like I was, you know, I don't know, throwing gasoline on a fire, trying to gas up the pick and everything. But I truly, genuinely did love watching Ladd McConkey. And like you said, the more you think about it, the more you like it. And you can just do whatever you need to with him. It's kind of like the discussion we had, we thought we were going to have with Quentin Johnson. Like, okay, even if he's not developed immediately, he can do, you know, crossers, he can do screens, he can get handoffs, whatever. But Ladd McConkey can then also win on the outside and also get open down the field with separation. And he runs a 4.39. So it's like, what does Ladd McConkey need to do? Anything you need him to do.
Yeah, I think that's wonderfully said as well. I just think he gives them a ton of options going forward. So excited to see that come to fruition. And that could come, you know, in the form of some veteran free agents, as people are pointing out. It sounds like Tyler Boyd is potentially going to sign with the Tennessee Titans, but they've hosted DJ Chark on a visit. They've been interested in Marquez Valdes-Scantling. Zay Jones was recently released. So, you know, signing or drafting Ladd is really just gives them a ton of flexibility. Next one we wanted to hit on here, biggest surprise. So I think this could be player selected or players positions not selected. Tyler, did you have anything in mind that you just kind of left you with a biggest surprise of the weekend for the Chargers?
Okay, so I was going to go with a player, but if it's open to positions not selected, I'm going center, or really interior offensive lineman. I was surprised that they did not go that route at least one time, because Roseman's on a 1 year deal. Hymas is, I believe, the last year of his deal. Yeah, maybe he has one more year, but it's not like you've seen a lot from him. So you really have no center next season. So who is that going to be? I don't know. Maybe it's Bozeman again. They could absolutely make it Bozeman, but he's on the 1 year deal. So I was surprised to see them pass up on center so many times throughout the draft. And so far, unless I, you know, maybe they have different plans than some of these offensive linemen than I'm led to believe, they didn't bring in like a center as an undrafted free agent either, unless that's Carson Barnhart or something, who was their tackle, who's kind of going to be a guard, I think. I don't really see where the backup center is going to be. And if it's not even this year, there's no one next year. So I was surprised to see them not address that in what was a very, very good interior offensive line class.
Yeah, no, I think that's where my brain immediately went to as well, because, you know, this is a regime that's, I mean, it was the Joe Alt pick. You know, they view offensive linemen as weapons. It's an offensive lineman centric building. I think I definitely picture them taking two, maybe even three offensive linemen to just get their specific types in here. Now, we are going to talk about undrafted free agents later, and they did sign some undrafted free agent offensive linemen, but it's just maybe not necessarily them not drafting a center, but, you know, they're right now potentially having right guard between Jamari Sawyer and Trey Pipkins, and like neither of those guys were brought in by this current regime. So I think them not bringing in any kind of competition for center or right guard, I think, is definitely, you know, qualifies for the biggest surprise. I think if you look at like veteran free agents they could still bring in, I do think that this is somewhere where they could look at going forward. Mark Lewinsky, formerly of the Giants, maybe potentially a fit there. There's Greg Van Roten. There's not a ton of good options. I mean, it's June. A lot of people have asked me about Dalton Risner. The dude is awesome, and I still cannot believe that he is available, but he's never played on the right side before, so I'd be a little skeptical there. There is Connor McDermott of the Patriots, formerly of the Patriots. There's Tyree Phillips, who the Chargers do have familiar with because Joe Ortiz helped drafted him. So I think I would like to see them maybe fill in that gap in post-draft veteran free agency.
Everyone's mentioning Jordan McFadden in the chat. And I mean, I wouldn't mind them trying that out because he has the athletic profile. I liked the idea of moving him to interior offensive line, but he only played tackle, I believe. And then he only worked out for the most part at guard last season. So I guess, I don't know. Like, did he try any center last year?
No, so in training camp, he was basically exclusively left guard. And then there was that one random week where, like, Rashawn was sick and Trey was hurt and Bailey was hurt. So they had Jordan McFadden play left tackle, and it did not go well. Granted, the Chargers have some great edge rushers, but, you know, the previous regime under Brandon Staley liked to get these young guys in, specifically, like, day three guys, and say, let's just have them do one thing and then we can expand their palette later on, so to speak. And so it will be interesting. Obviously, Harbaugh has mentioned him as a potential center flexibility. He does have the athletic profile, but he's never done it. And so much of playing center is the mental aspect of things. And we just don't, you never know how somebody is going to handle that. So we'll see what happens with Jordan McFadden. I think he should get the chance to challenge for a starting role at somewhere across on the center to the right side positions this year.
Yeah, I got to find where my notes are, but when looking at the centers that the Ravens had, I think two or three of them that had started for them were like guard tackle types as well. Like Tyree Phillips started for them at center at one point. Mm-hmm. A couple other names, I forget who. So they're used to that flexibility in Baltimore. I'm just curious if they'll do it here.
Yeah, that's a good call out. Mentioned earlier in the chat, but my biggest surprise of the weekend was definitely taking three receivers. I did not have that on my bingo card, especially, you know, coming off of the heels of, you know, not taking a second offensive lineman. So with Cornelius Johnson in the seventh round, Brendan Rice in the seventh round, there were still some other offensive linemen and tight ends and things like that. And so I thought it was curious that they did prioritize the triple dip of wide receivers. And I was surprised, like, on the chat, but then you sit there and think about it, and they also drafted two of the same body types, two of the same profiles. So I still am kind of a little surprised by the specific wide receivers that they took in the seventh round and maybe the kind of roles for them. So biggest surprise for me, triple dipping at wide receiver.
Yeah, definitely. That ties into the center conversation. I'm just surprised. Maybe it's because I've been so conditioned by Tom Telesco, but we discussed this. It always feels like you go for the higher RAS linebacker or safety or corner because they're going to play special teams, right? And then you go, okay, you know, we'll get your Dean Leonard or Jaw Taylor and they'll play special teams. I really didn't expect them to get two guys that could develop into your future X types in round seven. And then especially with some other needs, they could have gone into your offensive line. They could have gone any of these undrafted free agents. They have a few undrafted free agents I genuinely believe could have been drafted and maybe even should have been drafted. So to see them go two wide receivers in on round seven was definitely a surprise.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Serge L asking about Connor Williams at center. I think Bradley Bozeman is their starting center. Mm-hmm. I don't think they'll sign somebody who could like supersede him. And so Connor Williams is a fine center. I think he is a better center than Bozeman, but I think they want to give Bradley Bozeman his other chance to play. And Connor Williams tore his ACL or whatever knee injury he has in December. So I just don't know like how healthy that guy's going to be.
Yeah. My surprise isn't them. Like, I don't think they're going to just go sign another veteran center unless he's like a very much so clear backup type.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm mostly just surprised they didn't address it at all in the draft.
Right. Right. Cause like you mentioned, you know, there's no long-term guy that we know of. I mean, McFadden could play center, but mm-hmm. you know, we don't really know what that's like going forward. All right, next one here. Most underrated pick, Tyler. Who would you choose there?
Well, if you give a B+ or an A to all of your selections except one, I think the most underrated player is not going to be Tarheeb Still, the corner from Maryland, because I think a lot of Chargers fans, including myself and ourselves, we aren't super sure about the selection, and we're even looking maybe at undrafted free agents and saying, maybe they have a better shot, or looking at Jaw Taylor and saying, hey, maybe he actually will still be the guy while Tarheeb still develops. So I think right now, just based on how we feel about all the selections, I think he's now the most underrated, because I have a B+ or A for every other selection.
Yeah.
So I very much so like those selections. Still was the most puzzling. So I just think he's underrated. The Chargers see something in him. Joe Ortiz, Jim Harbaugh, like there's something there. I think there's definitely plenty of things to work with, but I'm curious what it is they see. And we're going to find out in camp in the preseason and maybe even if he starts in the regular season. So right now I think he's the most underrated because we might be expecting the least out of him so far.
Yeah, sound logic, especially on our show, because he was the only pick that we didn't like. And so underrated is a bit tough because if you look at like, within the fan base, everybody is expecting a ton of hype and production from Brendan Rice. So he can't be the pick. Nationally, Kamani Vidal has a ton of fans around the league and people are talking about him as like, oh, he could be the best running back on the Chargers. So like, it can't be him. Everybody's expecting RB1 production from him. You know, Cornelius Johnson, I think is properly rated. We just talked about Junior Colson being undervalued in terms of the draft, but again, he's the linebacker one and Ladd, same kind of stuff, and Joe Alt. And so I think by default for me, I think you kind of have to go with Justin Eboigbe, the defensive mm-hmm. lineman from Alabama. So this is definitely a process by elimination, so to speak. But I think a lot of reaction to the pick that I've seen mostly highlights his neck injury, mostly highlights like what he can't do, or you know, the lack of long-term health or things like that. But I think this is a guy who I was a big fan of. And in terms of the consensus board had them reaching for him. But to me, like, he went where he should have gone. I think, you know, I had him as a pretty clear end of round three, early round four grade. So he's going to be my choice. I think he can fill a very specific role. You know, as Arjun has pointed out, you're probably not getting a true like top tier productive defensive tackle outside of the first three rounds. Like it's lucky if you get it in the third round. So you're not going to get an elite player out of Justin Eboigbe, but I think you can get an above average starter out of him. And I think for me, that would qualify as most underrated pick based off of more of the national reaction to the pick as opposed to the fan reaction of the pick.
Yeah, I really like that. It was tough for me to find anything for Brendan Rice in these categories because, like, Chargers fans are like, this guy's going to be amazing. And it's like, okay, yeah. well, our expectations are now the expectations are so high for him. He has to be an 800-yard wide receiver or he didn't make it in some Chargers fans' eyes, it almost feels like. Yeah. I do have Justin Aboigbe in a different category, but I'm glad you went with him here. And I almost actually went with Ladd McConkey here only because some of the reaction to him nationally and by some fans was like, well, why'd they take Hunter Renfrow in the second round? I'm like, okay. So we are very much so underrating and didn't watch Ladd McConkey whatsoever in college.
Yeah.
So I felt like before the draft and then during the pick or when the pick happened, the way he was interpreted as his role or what he was able to do and who people thought he was, I'm like, okay, so we have no idea. We didn't watch him. We didn't look at any of the stats at all. And there was so much confusion about why Ladd McConkey over Roman Wilson. Well, he's better in like 7 different categories. He's faster. He's bigger. So it's like, it felt like very underrated because no one really minded, did the homework on him. Not no one.
Yeah.
A lot of people didn't. The Chargers certainly didn't. As Gabriel points out, they called him Brock Bowers like 3 separate times. Mm-hmm. Brock Bowers Light or mini Brock Bowers or whatever. But yeah, I was surprised by the reaction to the pick and the reaction to just the player in general.
Yeah, even some within the fan base, after we tweeted about how excited we were, we're like, why are you so excited for a slot receiver in the second round? It's like, well, maybe watch the player. I don't know what to tell you. Like, this is a guy who can, to me, he's a 3-level threat, you know, at any point. And he has the yards after catch ability. He has the speed. Maybe he's not like a super physical X receiver, but again, you don't need to ask him to do that. You play him in the other roles. And I think he is somebody, you know, who can play primarily as an outside receiver and be a fantastic option for this team. And I think, you know, my favorite stuff of him are, you know, the corners, the comebacks on the outside, as well as like the posts and the digs. And then he's just so creative after the catch with space around him. So he's somebody who I think fits very well. And like, even some people who did like the pick were like, oh, like they got a Julian Edelman type. It's like, well, come on, I mean, like, okay, you like him, but like, come on now, like, let's compare it to other people. So Jordan Addison remains like my favorite stylistic comparison. Mm-hmm. And I think with Addison, it's like, you know, 60% Z, 40% slot, and I think that's kind of how I envision Ladd in this offense going forward.
Yeah, and I remember, you know, everyone wanted Zay Flowers at 21 last year. And then they take Ladd McConkey this year and like, yeah, oh, he's too small. I'm like, Ladd McConkey is like 10 pounds heavier and 2 inches taller, like runs faster. Like, I don't know what happened. Everyone wanted Zay Flowers last year, but not McConkey this year. Now, it could be a film thing for sure, but people would just point out like the size thing. And it's like, yeah, Zay Flowers is not a big individual.
Yeah. You know, and I think stylistically, like those two are pretty similar as well. I think Zay is more creative, you know, in space, but yeah, I think you're looking at that kind of role, for the Chargers.
Yeah.
And it's a role that they valued, you know. They've had Zay Flowers, they've had Nelson Agholor in that kind of specific role. They've had obviously Marquise Hollywood Brown in that specific role. So it's a spot that they like. So next one here, most likely training camp darling from this one. I think obviously it could be Ladd, but I think training camp darling is, you know, it's relied upon big plays. And so I think there is a world where Cornelius Johnson gets 4 or 5 deep balls from Justin Herbert and everybody's going crazy and the takes go from like, I wouldn't be shocked if we go like full swing, like Brendan Rice is the next GOAT to Cornelius Johnson's going to take his job in August. Like, I think Cornelius Johnson has such big play potential. And like, that's what you want him to do. He's a long strider. He's a go-get-it guy. He can win contested catch situations. I think his contested catch rate was like 80% last year. Like, he didn't get a ton of opportunities, but he's an above-the-rim, long-speed kind of player. And that's just, like, even Jeremy Davis, like, had some training camp highlights because that's the kind of type that he was. So, I think Cornelius Johnson is the easy selection for me for potential training camp darling.
Okay, so I wanted to go with him because I totally get what you're going for, and that makes total sense. First of all, trench players eliminated in this scenario. No shot their training camp, darling. No, so no. That immediately took like Justin Aboigbe or any undrafted free agents off the board. Not happening. Yeah. The only thing with Cornelius Johnson, and maybe even Brendan Rice too, especially if they bring in Boyd or Chark or whoever, I'm worried that they're not going to be a training camp darling because of who's throwing to them. Now, that's not an Easton Stick thing. because Easton Stick actually did pretty well. That
could be a Max Duggan thing, you're saying?
Yes, that's what I'm trying to say here. So there's a I've watched training camp, and I've seen a lot of Easton Stick training camps where this was the case. It wasn't so much last year. But if you're the back end of the roster and you have your starting two or three, then you have your next three, and then Rice and Johnson, these guys are mostly with Duggan or the guy from Augustana, whatever college that is. I don't know how much they're going to be able to shine.
That's
now you're also playing DBs who aren't the starting, you know, trio by any means, but that was my concern. So I'm going Ladd McConkey here because Justin Herbert's going to be throwing him the football. That's kind of where I'm going with here. And also, like, he might return punts, he might return kicks, he might get handoffs, he might do screens, he might do all these super flashy things. And I think that, and it just also is faster other than Darius Davis, and it's only about by 0.03. He's the fastest wide receiver on the team in terms of his 40. So it's just going to look different. He's going to move different. And with Herbert throwing him the football, I just think he's going to be able to, like, actually show what he can do. I totally was about to go Cornelius Johnson or even Brendan Rice.
Yeah.
But I don't know if the quarterbacks are going to reward them.
I think, though, there will be probably more Easton Stick targets in there. We'll see how kind of the quarterback distribution works this year. But, you know, Max Duggan didn't exactly get a ton of reps last year. Did you give any consideration to Cam Hart here?
Ooh, I did not. I didn't, but I'm curious where he's going to play. Like, does Fulton immediately start over him? I guess probably in training camp. And then it's Cam Hart. Because if Hart's with the first group, it might be tough. And I think a lot of training camp comes down to, wow, look at wide receiver roasting DB on one-on-ones in the open field. It's like, that's not really how it's going to look in the NFL or even on 7-on-7s, 11-on-11s.
Yeah.
Sometimes the wide receivers take advantage of the DBs. So the flashiest thing and the least likely to get toasted. So I went with receiver here. I get Cam Hart, though. He's going to be the biggest DB out there.
Yeah, he'll definitely stand out on the field when they all stand next to each other.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
I also, like, the ball production is an issue there. So I think that could be tough for him. But, you know, in terms of, like, potential battles between him and Quentin Johnston and him and the other receivers who play X, like, that could be a way for him to stand out. But I think for him to be, like, a darling, he would have to get, like, a good amount of interceptions.
Yeah.
Okay, so in the light of, like, positivity and recovery, Unified Healthier is here today to tell us about the potential recovery of a storyline of sorts. The draft is all about positive vibes. The draft is all about hope. But sometimes players get off to a bit of a rocky start, and maybe they need a regime change. Maybe they need to make some changes stylistically. maybe they need to do some yoga or some meditation, or a lot of the Chargers are players these days are into Pilates. So Unified Health and Unified Healing is here to for us to talk about players who might need a bit of a recovery status this year for the Chargers. And that is specifically Zion Johnson and Quentin Johnston, the two previous first round picks of the Chargers. So Tyler and I wanted to take a minute here while we're talking about positive vibes, hope, recovery, superlatives, to mention the two previous first round picks with Zion Johnson and Quentin Johnston. And Tyler, what are your kind of expectations for these two players? As a lot of their stock is pretty low within the fan base, but new regime, new head coaching staff, Ben Herbert in the building, Zion pictures look great, Quentin Johnston pictures look great. So what's kind of your thought process with what we can expect out of those two players?
For Zion Johnson, my expectations are all of you that have been posting Steven, Arjun, and I jumping and cheering for the Zion pick, you're going to have to delete those this year, because you know what? I genuinely believe he's going to start to, and if not like get to, what he's supposed to be. We've seen the pictures. Sometimes they're a bit warped. There's one photo of him
where, yeah, his right biceps are like,
it's like my entire torso, which I wouldn't put it past him. Also, there's a bit of like, wow, Zion Johnson's really jacked. I'm like, yeah, he's had like a 9.7 RAS for like 3 years now. This guy's very athletic and very strong for a golfer and a cybersecurity degree major. But I truly believe he's going to have an excellent season. And you talk about, you know, with Unified Health, mental health, and you know, working through things. Tristan Wirfs had to start seeing a therapist because he had to switch sides on the offensive line. He was so anxious about that. Zion Johnson has not played the same position 2 years in a row since he started college. Like, it's been tackle, then guard, then tackle, then guard, then left guard, then right guard, then right guard, then left guard. Like, there, he has not settled in at one spot.
Yeah.
And that's very taxing for him. There's no like, okay, this is my third year of playing left guard with the same guy next to me on my left and the same guy next to me on my right. Hopefully there's some stability moving forward, A, with where he plays, and then hopefully Rashawn is healthy. Maybe Bozeman's a, you know, a mainstay for the future. So I truly believe actually getting to play the same position 2 years in a row is going to be huge for him. Obviously, Ben Herbert's getting him right. Then with Quentin Johnston, I do genuinely believe that he's going to have a much better, a more efficient season. I don't know how many yards he's going to get. This is not a hyper pass heavy offense, but I do believe there's a role for him, and I think they're going to understand how to use him. I'm not saying that he's Roman Wilson. He doesn't have the same speed or the same body type, but they very much so at Michigan found ways to get Roman Wilson around and move him to get him in the best spots possible. They knew how to use him as a weapon. And I think Jim Harbaugh is going to make sure that happens here as well. Like Quentin Johnston, maybe he's never your future X receiver. Maybe he's never a 1,000-yard wide receiver, but he's going to be utilized in a way that maximizes what he can do. So whether it's, you know, 800 yards, great, or just gets to 600 this year, I think the efficiency is going to be better and the confidence is going to be there. And that's so key. Like the mental aspect of football, I just didn't feel like they gave Quentin Johnston enough of a, like, hey, let's raise your floor, dude. Let's make you more confident. Let's get you the easy stuff. Every single time there's a rookie quarterback that goes on the field and they throw one screen, what does the announcer say? Oh, they're getting the rookie quarterback in a rhythm. They're starting him off and getting him nice and comfortable in the pocket and all that. Where was that for Quentin Johnston? Where was the elevation of his floor? Where was the confidence for him? So I expect him to be better and more efficient and more confident. I don't expect big raw numbers. I think the efficiency goes up.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think that's really what I'm looking for out of Quentin specifically, is just higher levels of consistency. And I think Zion is the same kind of way. I think Zion, the good film of Zion is like the potential of truly an all-pro guard, in my opinion. But there's 2 to 4 plays each game where it's really a tough watch, you know, and it results in a sack or a big tackle for loss. Like, it's never just like, oh, like he got beat like a little bit and then like Justin was able to like step that way and like it was fine. Like all of his bad plays lead to significantly poor results from the team. So it's tough there. And Quentin's kind of the same way. It's like, you know, it's not just that he's, you know, dropping like a slant on 1st and 7 and he only would have, or 1st and 10, he would have gained 6 yards. It's like, no, like this guy's, he's dropping like a potential touchdown, a potential 1st down on 3rd and long. So it's just a consistency aspect for both of these players. And I think this is the right regime to take them to that point. And I think both players have approached this offseason the right way. Zion's training with Duke Mannyweather the first time, with Rashawn, with Trey, with Foster Sorrell. Quentin Johnson has been spending his offseason training with Marvin Harrison Jr. and like all of the receivers down there. And I think both of them are putting in the work to make sure that they are putting their foot, their best foot forward this summer. And I love to see that. I think we should be celebrating that more often. And I think both of these players have the potential to rebound in 2023 or 2024, excuse me. So this segment, of course, has been brought to you by Unified Healing. Please go check out the unifiedhealing.com/guilty to find a location nearest you. Again, that is unifiedhealing.com/guilty. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that little transition and promo. So Tyler, let's wrap this up here with our other superlatives. I saw an article talking about the Packers linebacker position, and they framed the superlative as most linebacker likely to exercise their specific demons at linebacker. Chargers have had a few demons of sorts in the draft, whether it's a specific position or, of course, the draft slot. So if you had to choose one player who's going to exercise some demons for the Chargers, who's that player going to be?
I think he's already started to exercise all of Alex's demons. And if you saw his reaction to the selection, you could tell that he was a freed man finally. Yeah. I believe Kamani Vidal does that for the Chargers. Does that mean I think he's going to be an RB1 in this league? No, not necessarily. I don't believe that to be the case. I wouldn't put it past him. He certainly was a ball carrier and a very good one at Troy. But the Chargers have been desperately looking for that RB2 since Melvin Gordon left and Eckler became the RB1. And Eckler has asked several seasons, hey, can anyone step up and be my RB2? And nobody has. Justin Jackson was the closest. They let him walk. Then it was Joshua Kelly, maybe. Never really happened. Larry Roundtree, never happened. Isaiah Spiller has not happened. So I don't know if it's sunk cost fallacy at this point. I'm like, yeah, one of these is going to hit, I swear. You know, I don't know if I'm gambling broke now at this point, but I do believe Kamani Vidal is the guy to break that curse, to finally get the Chargers an actual RB2. I don't know if it happens this year, right? If J.K. Dobbins is healthy, he's probably RB2. But I think Kamani Vidal could be that guy to just be a nice multi-year RB2 for them. And thank goodness, because it's tough too, because even if he's RB3, the Chargers have been looking for an RB3 too. Like, it's been Eckler and just guys, and hoping that one of these guys works out. Hey, let's go get Sony Michel. Hey, here's Elijah Dotson. He made the roster, and nobody really like sticks and works out. So even if he's a decent RB3, I think that'll exercise some demons too.
Yeah, it felt like the Chargers for so long had just like a really nice deep stable of running backs, and maybe that was the Anthony Lynn effect, where they could plug in, you know, X running back and they could have a great day. I mean, Troy Wayne Pope against the Broncos had like an awesome day. And so it's just like the Chargers have been missing depth. And I think also the scheme there can certainly play a role into that. So I think that's a great call. When I first thought of this pick, Vidal was my first thought. And then I looked more at Cam Hart and I looked more at like the Chargers draft history, and the outside cornerback position for the Chargers in the draft just has, it's been rough, and the history of it, you know, under Tom Telesco was just not pretty. I mean, obviously the Jason Verrett thing was all about injuries, but since that point, you're talking about Craig Mager, who was maybe probably more of a slot cornerback. And then the next cornerback taken after that, Desmond King, that didn't work out so great. Although the first season was fantastic. He was an all-pro potential player, it looked like, and then it kind of went downhill, and there's just not been a ton of great homegrown cornerback play really ever since like Quentin Jammer was around. We thought we've had bits and pieces of it here. I mentioned Verrett, obviously with Trevor Robinson. I do think that Cam Hart can be that guy that we have been missing from a fan base in terms of a homegrown outside cornerback who can come in, make the roster, be a playmaker, be a mainstay past the rookie season, and exercise some outside cornerback demons. Obviously, coming off of the heels of the J.C. Jackson stuff, maybe providing a little bit more incentive there too. But that's kind of where my mind went to after like thinking about this one, was like, man, like outside corner outside of Casey Hayward recently has been rough for the Chargers. And I think Cam Hart can exercise those demons.
That's a really good call. I didn't think of Cam Hart here for this one, but I completely understand it, because the Chargers just have not, they've had great corner play, but they never get it for more than one season, it feels like, with some of these guys, or even for like a full season. You know, or some guys are ascending, they're going to get there, and then, didn't get there. Michael Davis, a great season, here's a bad one. That's a great season, here's a bad one. J.C. Jackson, hey, maybe this is it. Okay, nope, didn't happen. Trevor Williams, Jason Verrett, all these guys, you know, you're trying so hard. And I get that it's not an easy position, and coverage is, you know, it changes quite a bit year over year, but just having the same guy start out there for four seasons, hopefully, three seasons even, and grow into this defense and understand the defense, not have to worry about, a new scheme, this and that, blah, blah, blah. Like, he just gets it through and through because he's been there and done that. That would be huge for that would be absolutely huge for this team. So that's a really good call.
Yeah, I again, that could be me. I love the player coming out, and obviously, you know, hopefully willing some of that into existence. But that's kind of where I thought about next year. Next one, this is kind of more post-draft. Biggest question mark on the roster, or maybe the under the radar need. I think for me, this is safety three in this defense. I think it's a lot of uncertainty outside of Derwin James and Alohi Gilman. I mean, we all want JT Woods to pan out. It certainly has not at this point in time. AJ Finley showed some really high quality safety or special teams traits. They have a couple undrafted free agents who could be answers for a later question here. But for me, this defense needs three safeties. Like, I think if you watched the Ravens in particular this past season, it was just such a great mix of Kyle Hamilton, Marcus Williams, and then Geno Stone. And if you look at like Michigan's defense in the past, you know, this year they had Mikey Samuels still in the slot, but previously that guy has been like a Dax Hill type who starts as a safety and then in nickel packages would come up and play the slot. Well, if that's Derwin James playing the slot, you need two safeties behind him, and there's no other safety outside of Alohi Gilman that I trust right now. And again, that could change in training camp. But to me, if there's a place where I would like to see them go sign a veteran, that is the safety room. I think they need some true dependability back there. And obviously, I'm not going to be opposed to like a Justin Simmons or a Quandre Diggs type. It feels like those two guys are going to target more like contenders, but there are some quality other safeties out there that they could still target and play a quality role and be an upgrade over JT Woods and Akeem Dent and AJ Finley and all that group.
Yeah, I would hate to see Derwin James limited by the lack of a safety behind him to be able to move him around, which has kind of been the case for a few years now, I feel like.
Yeah.
And then I would hate for them to also, as much as I hope he does well, I would hate for them to feel like they have to put all their trust in JT Woods when the previous regime didn't quite find a way to make that work. So,
yeah.
Now, we're talking about career resurgences and things like that. Maybe this is the regime that does that. Maybe Minter and Herbert and Harbaugh, like, it just clicks for JT Woods. But that's a lot of projection. That's a lot of hoping. Right. And last year was also quietly kind of confusing with, like, what happened in terms of why he was inactive.
Yeah, we still don't really know, like, anything
about
injury.
Right, so...
issue.
Yeah, I agree. That's a really good one. The chat has already said mine. That's tight end, which I guess is only an underrated need if the Chargers actually feel like it's an underrated need. It just depends on what they're looking for, but...
Sure.
You know, in Baltimore, now, this is Mark Andrews, but, like, well, you know, Mark Andrews had, like, 800 receiving yards. He had 1,300 receiving yards one season. Which of these guys is crossing 450 this year? You know, are any of them crossing 450 this year? Do the Chargers even care if they do? I don't know. But they've always had at least one pretty decent pass catcher. And obviously then Isaiah Likely could step in and he got some targets and some catches too. I don't know who that is this year. So I don't know if they care. Obviously they currently don't because they didn't go out and get like a pure pass catcher who's youngish, but I guess it's expensive, right? But Hayden Hurst is your best receiving tight end right now. And I don't think he's had a season over 500 yards in quite some time, if not ever. I could be wrong, maybe once. That is an underrated need. And I think a spot where an undrafted free agent can make the team.
Yeah. And I think it'll be really interesting to see what third type of tight end they kind of target, because as a receiver, Hayden Hurst and Donald Parham are maybe a little redundant, you know, both of them kind of working the seam, both of them being, you know, physical over the middle tight end pass catchers. maybe that lends itself more towards like a Stone Smart being the third tight end, because he can split out wide, he can play the slot, he can do some things after the catch. Maybe that leads to one of the undrafted free agents. But yeah, as Gabriel Caldera points out, this room and this offense is ready-made for Colston Loveland in 2025. So that could be something to look forward to next year. But, you know, tight end wise, I don't know, like, do they sign another veteran? This could have been your biggest surprise that they didn't draft a single tight end. And, you know, I thought that they certainly could have taken Tanner McLaughlin several times. They could have taken Jared Wiley a couple of times and just give them a little bit something different and also have like a long-term insurance plan. They don't really have that guy right now. So yeah, this tight end room I think is in better shape from a blocking standpoint for sure from last year, but receiving wise, I don't know. Like, is this like a Hayden Hurst gets 400 yards and Will Disley gets 300 and Donald Parham gets 150 and you call it good just because you just kind of platoon the group from the three of them. So it is a little bit confusing right now.
Yeah, I would agree. Again, I don't know if they care. I don't think it maybe matters a whole ton, but I'm just dying to get Herbert that middle of the field tight end option. So
yeah,
maybe it is in 2025.
Our second to last one here is day three pick most likely to produce excess value for the specific team. I think we've hit on a few of the players, but I think for me, this is where you bring up Brendan Rice. I think the potential of Brendan Rice to be a possible starting wide receiver in the league, like if Brendan Rice hits, you're paying him, you know, $900,000 for the next 4 years. And if he's even if he is a guy who can consistently give you 400, 500 yards receiving, that's a ton of excess value for a seventh round pick. So I think this for me is where you talk about Brendan Rice, because I do feel like of the seventh round picks, I would trust Rice to hit as a receiver probably more than I would Cornelius Johnson, just because of his profile. And also, man, like, he very clearly has a chip on his shoulder, and that is extremely valuable for, you know, producing excess value, so to speak.
Yeah. Again, going back to that phone call with the media team, you know, showed us a little bit insight into how he was feeling, what he wanted to do. You know, he's like, I love Jim Harbaugh. Like, this is one of my favorite teams. I wanted to go to one of these teams, like the Chargers. So that's a really good call there. I think that, you know, Josh Palmer could be gone next season. I don't know that it would prevent them from getting an upgrade over Brendan Rice, who, even though we felt he could be like a third, fourth round pick, was a seventh round pick. So I don't know how much he'll play this year, but yeah, I genuinely believe on that contract, even if he's just a wide receiver three, that seventh round rookie contract as a wide receiver three, yeah, heck, like that's pretty good there. And if he makes the roster and continues to be able to chip in here and there, that's awesome. I actually didn't realize he played more special team snaps than Cornelius Johnson. I do think Johnson ends up being, the last two seasons at least.
Yeah.
Maybe Johnson ends up being more of a special teamer on this team. Maybe USC needed him, Rice more. I don't know. But he did play, you know, a good number of snaps. I think 100 the last couple of seasons. Johnson was 80-something. So there's a world where he's, you know, pretty productive next year, following year, et cetera. This is where I was going to bring up Justin Aboigbe in terms of the day three pick. I think that he could just flat out start this year. I don't know if they have like a set, you know, grouping, but they rotate quite a bit. They're going to rotate quite a bit on the defensive line, and he's going to be part of it. And there's just too many question marks in the defensive tackle room. Like, I don't know who fits. I don't know really who's good, you know, other than Morgan Fox. And I don't know if he fits. So it really isn't like an actual, these are guys are all from the previous regime. Obviously they brought in Puna Ford. How much does he play? I don't know. Justin Aboigbe could flat out just start this year, or at least be a strong part of a rotation. So I'll go with him here.
Yeah, no, that's a really good call. Like, I think projecting this defensive line group, I think is very difficult. I also didn't realize like just how stout Puna Ford was until these pictures coming out of him standing next to Morgan Fox and him working out with Morgan Fox. You see how much of a different type of build Puna Ford is. But I think having Justin Aboigbe gives them a lot of flexibility up front, because if they just want like two physical nose tackle types, they can have Otito and Puna play at the same time, because I think both of those guys can play different roles. If they want more of a pass rushing, you know, package. They can bring Igbuogbe and Morgan Fox out at the same time. Both of them are fantastic stunt and pick players. I think that would complement each other pretty well. So the defensive tackle room isn't necessarily like great right now. And I do think that's probably a position they target pretty heavily in next year's free agency class. But it's a group that I think can produce a lot of excess value. I think Puna can produce excess value. I think Igbuogbe, Fox, all these guys can have better seasons than they're currently projected.
Yeah, there was it 2021 where the starters like Jerry Tillery and maybe at that time Linval Joseph, they got hurt. And so it was just like, or had COVID. And so there was like three or four undrafted free agent guys, like,
yeah,
you know, Braden Fajoko, who's the guy from Northwestern?
Oh, Joe Gaziano.
It was like that crew was out there against the Steelers and they were just kicking ass. Like that could be this group. You know, no one who's a bona fide first round selection. There's no Murphy, there's no Aaron Donald, but like it's a good group of dudes. And so I think there's a world where, yeah, these guys could just as a collective unit be pretty solid.
Yeah. Yeah, that's totally fair. All right, last one here is where we're going to talk about the undrafted free agents. We have most likely undrafted free agent to make the roster. I think there's a few guys here. I have watched five of them. I think you're at more than that. How many have you watched to this point?
Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I probably watched like 12, I want to say.
Okay.
That's just the total. I have not. I'm apologize for those who are hoping for an Augustana quarterback breakdown. I don't have that. I don't know who's even has that. I need some Campbell film. I need some App State film. So I'm getting there.
Yeah. So who have you not watched outside of those schools that you just mentioned?
Mostly the DBs. So Jalen Phillips, the safety from Clemson, Zamari Walton, the corner from Ole Miss. There's someone from, is it NC State? Yeah, Robert Kennedy, the corner from NC State.
And the defensive lineman too, no?
I've churned through, I think, all the defensive linemen at this point. They're cluttered in my brain. But as long as they went to... Yes, Savion Jackson. Mm-hmm. I actually think he's the best like pass rusher of the group.
Okay.
Yeah, I just got to him from NC State. Yeah, I got to him too.
Okay, so I have watched Zamari Walton from Ole Miss, the corner. I've watched Willis Patrick, the guard from TCU.
Mm-hmm.
I've watched Akeem Dent, Thomas Harper, and I'm going to count Carson Barnhart because I've watched like Michigan take like 37 times. So that's where I'm at. I'll do a lot more homework this weekend and then we'll have like a full undrafted episode, undrafted free agent episode next week. So you're at 12. I'm at 5. I feel like we can have enough of a conversation here to bring up this potential here because the Chargers roster is at the point where right now three of these guys could make it because they just don't have the depth right now. So if you had to pinpoint one, Tyler, who would you choose?
I'll go Willis Patrick here. I think their Chargers have the five starters in the offensive line and then three primary backups. So Hymus, McFadden, and then Pipkins. Maybe Sarah, but we'll see. Obviously with Pipkins, you no longer have a strong requirement for a fourth tackle. The Ravens, the Chargers, they've carried 9. They've carried 10 before. So I think there's somewhere between 1 or 2 spots here available for another offensive lineman. And it's not like Jim Harbaugh's not going to carry offensive linemen. So it comes down to like Barnhart or some of these other guys. I think Willis Patrick actually ends up taking it. I genuinely liked Willis Patrick's tape a lot more than Carson Barnhart's. But maybe it's unfair. Like Barnhart had to play tackle against, you know, some of these edge rushers like Chop Robinson. You know, there was not like it's very different, right? So it's he's going to convert to guard. But I like Willis Patrick's tape a lot. He apparently was very good at the Shrine Bowl. Duke Manyweather says he's like an actual NFL starter potential kind of guy in the future. So I'm going with him here. He worked his way from D2 all the way to Jackson State, all the way to TCU. Final year, put up a 99 PBE. Like I think you feel the best about him. And also because they might have 1 to 2 spots available for him.
Yeah, I think that's a good call out. I think so. The consensus board has, it doesn't have all of the Chargers undrafted free agents ranked on there, but the five highest were Carson Barnhart at 325, Akeem Dent at 352, and then Willis Patrick at 379, followed by Zach Hines, the other tight end at 415, and then Thomas Harper at 432. So You chose Willis Patrick. I think that's spot on. I agree with him having better tape than Carson Barnhart. Again, some of that is where Barnhart played and who he was going against, right? But the projection for Willis Patrick at guard is pretty clean. Like he's a big physical mauling kind of type, and body type wise is pretty similar to who they have in Jamari Sawyer. I think Sawyer's a little bit more quick twitch and mm-hmm. explosive off of the ball, but he was somebody that I liked. If I had watched him, I would have given him a draftable grade for sure.
Yeah.
Would have had him ahead of Barnhart, who I did grade. So it's that's a good one. Positional value, positional role. I think it fits. Again, that could change with a veteran free agent, but until they sign another safety, I think Akeem Dent has to be number one on this list. I think his tape, his athletic profile shows a lot more meat on the bone than what he was able to show at Florida State. They had him 35 yards off the ball certain yes, times. Did. And it's just like, he has no chance to impact the game at all. And then when he gets up in the box from time to time, you see him match up with tight ends. You see him match up with receivers. He had some fantastic reps against Johnny Wilson from Florida State, that would have been his teammate, not Florida State, against LSU, the third receiver against from LSU. I forget his name, but
Lacy.
Yes. Thank you. So I think he has some good one-on-one coverage reps. I think he has some quality slot reps in there as well. I think for me, he probably is more of a free safety type, but a couple of really fantastic run defense plays. There was a play against LSU where he went kind of bailed out to one hash, ended up coming across the field and lit Jaden Daniels up on the opposite hash. So he's a guy who is physical. He's fast. There's range here. And we just talked a lot about the uncertainty of JT Woods. There's really no reason for me to see that he cannot take the safety three spot, because there's no surefire thing in front of him. So until they sign somebody else, I think Akeem Dent is my easy answer here.
Yeah, I just started watching him. I've watched two games. I was going to do the LSU game next. So now I'm bummed that I didn't get to that one today, but that's fine. Yeah, it was strange to watch his tape. And then, well, first I looked at his numbers and it's like 21 yards allowed on six targets. Like, did no one target him? What happened?
No one targeted him.
And no, like he just never got an opportunity. So I'm going to have to go back and watch 2022. I think he was targeted a whopping 21 times. Like, ooh, at least that gives me something. So the good news is he was targeted six times last year and had a PBU on one of them. So, hey, there you go. That's a good rate, I guess. I'll have to watch more of him, but he definitely struck me as at least special teams type, and that'll help you make the roster for sure. So I think that overall he'd be more athletic than a Raheem Lane, maybe less athletic than JT Woods, but maybe a more sound tackler. So I don't think he's a perfect prospect by any. I don't think he's a perfect prospect by any means. Maybe he is just limited to being a deep safety. I don't know, but yeah, I think he could make the roster. My second pick would have been Thomas Harper, though. Now that's tricky, though, because they have two slot corners. They have Jaw Taylor. They do have Tarheeb still. I thought Thomas Harper with the Chris O'Leary connection and technically Cam Hart connection, that helps a ton. And like he's the one I watched and went, okay, like you could actually develop that into a start, like the spring, the coverage down the field, carrying receivers down the field. Like I'm like, okay, this is someone you could genuinely develop into a starter. So I think that DB, like one of those two DBs, and then a trench player, I think are my top three.
Yeah, and Harper has legit slot tape, and he went toe-to-toe with Emeka Ibuka, and then I watched him against USC. He went toe-to-toe with like Taj Washington and those guys. He has really good tape and he tested extremely well, but he's small. He's like 5'9". He has like sub 30 inch arms. So it's a different kind. He actually, now that I'm thinking about this, he does kind of remind me of a Bryce Callahan. And I think his ability to carry receivers deep, match routes, instincts are fantastic, tackling ability as well. He was listed on the guide as a safety. And then he was listed on the consensus board as a safety. I do not understand. Like, he's firmly a slot corner. I don't think I watched a single snap of him like playing safety. And he, like, his snap distribution chart is like 85% slot, and everything else is like as a blitzer, you know? And so it's just, he's a slot corner all day. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be curious to see kind of how they fit him in, because I do really like the tape. He's just small. And that's really like the only reason why I think he didn't draft it.
Yeah, fair enough. Because, yeah, like you said, the tape was pretty good. We'll get to the rest of these guys at some point. I said the tight ends could maybe make it in. I just don't know. You know, I think like everyone's going to fall in love with Zach Hines because he's like enormous and had a, like, you know, he played at South Dakota State. So he got to just do like the,
he's got the college name because there's been so many other South Dakota State tight ends and everybody's yes. like, this could just be like the other guys. Like, well, those other guys were top 100 draft picks.
Yes. No, this is definitely not Tucker Kraft here by any means. I think Luke Benson has a better shot of making it, even though he has like 84 yards last season. But that's a blocker.
You said he could do like some fullback stuff too, right?
Yeah, totally. I actually don't know why they didn't use him more at Georgia Tech, because they would bring on like number 80 and number two and they were worse. So I don't know. Maybe they must have been better receiving options. Yeah. But as a blocker, he was way better than they were, I thought. So yeah, I think he competes with Ben Mason, and that's like a whole distinct role. You know, Hines will compete with like Donald Parham. But there's like, even if he beats out Donald Parham or whatever, he's like tight end three there. Yeah. If you just flat out win the fullback, you know, H-back job, you're just the guy. So I think that Benson is a good shot there.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll do some more homework on the undrafted free agent class this weekend. And then next week we'll have some more coverage there. So I think it is pretty clear just based off of like consensus and like position needs. Like you're talking about a DB or an offensive lineman. And then you can kind of see where you're at from there. Like, they signed three undrafted free agent wide receivers. That's going to be tough for them to make it.
Right.
But interesting backgrounds here from all of those wide receivers. Like, there's the kid from Eastern Carolina who was initially a walk-on at Georgia. And then there was the kid from Fresno State who went to like three other schools also. So interesting backgrounds there. I'm excited to see what those look like.
Yeah, I was trying to get the Oklahoma State receivers film. Leon Johnson, because he had like not much happened, and then I can't remember which two games it was, but there was two like legit teams he faced, and he had like 300 yards in two separate games. It's like, whoa, what the heck is this? Pretty decent RAS. I think he's like 6'4 or something. So yeah, as Ren Yaj 24 points out in the chat, he's huge. Yeah, so I gotta find actual tape on him. I've seen people post clips, that's great. I gotta find like an entire games of him.
Yeah,
the only two games that were up, he had like 12 yards. So I'm not watching that. I'm not watching 2 hours of 24 yards.
Yeah.
I do want to learn more about him though. And then Jalen Johnson just flat out, like, I thought he was awesome against Michigan. So I could totally see why they brought him in. Cause I watched some of his like catches. I'm like, oh, there's a, like, he actually like looked pretty good. So
yeah, they saw him up close. Like some of the clips that you posted, he kind of cooked Mikey Samuels still a few times.
Yes, in that game. Yeah, no, he had some legit, and there's a couple I didn't post where he was targeted or got open, like against Samuels still wide open. I'm like, okay, who is this individual? So I like him a lot. It's just, it sucks for them because they took three receivers and they might sign another one.
Yeah, that receiver room is gonna be crowded. So they're at 10, potentially looking to sign another one. If they go 11 receivers into training camp, I think that's probably the most that I've ever seen them have. Usually like they'll have their starters, right? But then, like, you know, it's just like some guy who's, there's no chance that they can make the roster. Like, this is an interesting group in the second half, you know, outside of the top three. So curious to see how it plays out. Hopefully Max Duggan can give them some valuable reps in the training camp and in the preseason. We can see what these guys can do.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, usually for the Chargers, it's 4 or 5 actual genuine starters, maybe a special teams, you know, returner type, and then like the white dude who crushes it in camp and we all want to make the roster. Like, that's just a yearly tradition. Austin Prohl.
Wait, there's no white guys this year outside of Ladd. Ladd's the only white guy.
That's how good he is. He's gonna make the team outright.
Oh, that's so funny. Dylan Cantrell. Oh man. Yeah. Good group. All right. That's our superlative show. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that one. Tyler, any final thoughts before we head out?
I'm checking if Austin Prohl is white.
He is. Can confirm. He's from Minnesota. Okay, not that all people from Minnesota are white, but yes, he is white.
Okay. Sounds good. Yeah. Excited to see, you know, to dive into like the actual roster and maybe some more like Chargers film, Michigan film.
Yeah,
See where these guys go. And this undrafted free agent class is really, really good, I think. I'm excited to do that episode and really dive in.
Yeah, I've watched so much college tape. I'm excited to go back and watch NFL tape again, and study this Ravens, you know, offense, study what was going on with, you know, players like Zion and Quentin Johnson and all that stuff. So the summer months are approaching. Hopefully you guys continue to stay tuned to the podcast. We will have a couple weeks off in June, but training camp is right around the corner, man. We're a few short months away from the start of training camp, and then we can really, you know, full steam ahead towards the regular season. So it should be a ton of fun, a lot of interesting summer projects to cover this year for sure. All right, that's going to do it for us. Another episode of the Guilty as Charged podcast. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Like, comment, subscribe, all that good stuff does help to continue to grow the show. We'll see you next time. As always, Bolt up.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.